Genesis chapter 43. And the famine was sore in the land. You know, if you look at that little verse, you know it's hard to find God in that verse. It's hard to find Him. I mean, look real close. Look as long as you want to and tell me if you can find Him. It was more than just a famine. It was sore. That means that it was a hard time. That means times was heavy. I mean, times were very, very uncertain. And just because you can't see God in there doesn't mean He's not there. You just can't see Him. But as the story unfolds, you find out He was there. Regardless of what it looked like. It doesn't mean that He didn't know what was going on. I bet you those people that's in that famine, I bet they were wondering, where's God? Does God even know what I'm going through? Just because you can't see God in it doesn't mean that God doesn't care. Because He showed you later on that He does care. He cared about them people in that famine. Doesn't mean that God can't do something about it. And it come to pass when they had eaten up the corn, which they had brought out of Egypt, their father said unto them, go again and buy us a little food. And Judah spake unto him, saying, the man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, you shall not see my face except your brother be with you. If thou wilt send our brother with us, we will go down and buy thee food. But if thou wilt not send him, we will not go down. For the man said unto us, you shall not see my face except your brother be with you. Now what God has done, and I'm sure you're all familiar with the story. But God has put all the salvation of the land on one person. For only one person knew what to do with the situation at hand. God had put the salvation of all the land on one man because only one man knew what to do with what was coming. God's not only put the salvation of all the land on one person, but God has put the survival of all the land in one place. There was only one place that you could go for survival, and that was to Joseph's storehouse. Couldn't go to the bank. Couldn't turn to the government. Even the government didn't know what to do. Pharaoh had done called all the wise men. He had done had a council. He had done had a summit of all the heads. Nobody knew what to do. And so now all the salvation of the land's on one person, and all the survival of the land is now in one place. In literature, that's what they call foreshadowing. You see, today's salvation of the whole world now rests upon one person. Oh, there's a lot of churches. There's a lot of religions, a lot of doctrines, a lot of beliefs, a lot of faiths. But there's not but one person, there's not but one salvation that rests upon one person. All the salvation of the world is on one person. It's on the Lord Jesus, because He alone knows what to do with what's coming. Don't nobody else know what to do. He alone knows what to do with what's coming. The survival of all the world is now in one place. That's the church house. Turn anywhere you want to, but all the survival of the world is now in one place. So how does one person get all this honor? How did Joseph get all the honor of the salvation of the world, of the land, on one person? Because he was the only one that could make dreams come true. Boy, there's not but one today who can make dreams come true. I had a dream all my life that one day I wanted to be happy. I'd come up with a divorced mom and dad. I'd come up in an orphan's home, and I stumbled out through life looking for happiness. And I had a dream. This old boy, I had a dream. I wanted to be happy. Can I tell you, the Lord has fulfilled my dream. I am one happy man. I've got a dream about heaven. I got a dream. I'm telling you, Jesus is going to make that dream come true one day. He's the only one that can make dreams come true. So if all this salvation now rests upon one man, Joseph, and all the survival of the land is now in one place, then how are we going to get people to come to Joseph? I mean, if he alone can save, and if his storehouses alone have the substance for survival, then how are we going to get people to come to Joseph? How are we going to get families to move? How are we going to get whole families to come to the storehouse? You see, Joseph was that once suffering son of a father. He was a suffering son of a father who loved him more than anybody. And yet he was hated by his own. Even though he was the father's favorite, he was hated by his own kin. They hurled him in a pit. They treated him very cruelly. They gave him no water. They saw the anguish of his soul. They harassed him. They sold him for a few pieces of silver. They herded him out of sight. They denied him his home. They denied him his father's presence. They denied him his father's house. But that Joseph that they treated so cruelly and so denied him is now the Lord of the land. That one they hated is now over everybody. He's been set over all the people. He's got a ring on his hand. He sits at the right hand of Pharaoh. He's arrayed in fine linen. Got a gold chain around his neck. And everybody's bowing to him and confessing that he is that authority. So if you go to him, you live. But if you don't go to him, you die. Jacob and his family are now in a very sore famine. Jacob and his family are now suffering a lot of sorrow. They see themselves fixing to lose their land, their homes. They see this famine so sore that it's fixing to rob them. It's already took all their joy. It's took their happiness. It's taken their health. And Jacob looks around and he knows that without some kind of help, they're going to die. But the problem is that Jacob and his family are far, far away from Joseph. In fact, they don't even know that the one that is alive can help them. They don't even realize that the one that can give them everything they need for survival, they don't even realize that he's alive. They are far away from Joseph. They're far, far away from salvation. Far away from the storehouse. But without Joseph, they're going to die a horrible death. Without Joseph, everything's going to dry up. They're going to die of thirst. Without Joseph, they can't even get into the storehouse for the substance that they're going to need for survival. So how are we going to get Jacob and his family to go to Joseph? How are we going to get those that are about to die to the storehouse? Famine. God's going to use a famine to drive them to Joseph. God's going to use the hardest time of their life. God's going to use all their misery and all their sorrow. And there would come a time, years down the road, that they would look back and bless the famine. Because without the famine, they were never going to get to Joseph. Boy, we curse the hard times, don't we? We kick against the hard times. You see, their famine, God has sent 7 years of famine down upon them. 7 years of heartache. 7 years of misery. 7 years where their life dries up and things just seem to get worse and worse and worse and worse. He takes away their rain, takes away their hope, takes away their peace. He takes away their joy. He takes their life. He takes their love for one another away. And all of a sudden, in that home where they used to have some joy, they're all arguing now. They're fussing with one another. They're fighting with one another. People that ought to be loving one another are now fighting one another. They're not only fighting, but they're blaming each other for all the misery. That's what God had sent upon them. The most difficult times of their life, they're blaming each other. And times was getting so hard. Times was getting so miserable. And Jacob now looks for help. You stay in a family long enough, you'll look for help. You will. You let the hard times roll in. It won't be long. It may take you a while. You'll kick against them for a while. But if they get hard enough and heavy enough and they stay on there long enough, it won't be long. You'll be looking for help. You say, I'm not there yet. I'll give you a couple more years of heartache. You'll get there. He's going to get you there. Jacob now looks at his family. And he's looking for help. He looks at them boys. He said, hey boys, there's corn in Egypt. Get you down and get us some corn. And that's how God got Jacob and his family to go to Joseph. A famine drives them out of Egypt. A famine drives them to Joseph. A famine drives them to the storehouse of famine drives them all the way to salvation. Now there is a storehouse. God's got a storehouse. Sometimes it's hard to get people to enjoy the storehouse. There's a storehouse, and the Bible calls it over in the book of Luke, calls it the Father's house. And that Father's house, you can find plenty and to spare of everything you need for survival. For you see, in the Father's house, there's plenty of forgiveness. There's plenty of forgiveness. I don't care how far that hog pen you've gone. I don't care how you've dishonored the Father. I don't care how long you've been out there. I don't care if you've been with a harlot. I don't care what you've done. There is plenty of forgiveness in the Father's storehouse. There's plenty of mercy in the Father's house. You can find all the mercy that you need in life in the Father's house. There's plenty of forgiveness. There's plenty of love. You say, nobody loves me. Hey, get in the Father's house. There's plenty of it. I bet you that prodigal, when he was out there, he didn't love nobody. Nobody loved him. But when he got back to that Father's house, he found all the love that he would need for the rest of his life. He found so much love, he couldn't have been a Baptist, because the Bible said he was a dancing. So he was dancing. He found plenty of kindness. He found plenty of wisdom. My father bought 3 acres of land on the west side of Weatherford, Texas, outside of Fort Worth. And Interstate 20 missed my dad's land by about 80 yards. And my daddy, what he did, he built a They built a flat top house with no windows and one big sliding door. And when you slid that door back and you stepped in my dad's house, my dad spent 30 years in the Navy and come out. And he retired out in 63, stayed in there 30 years from 33 to 63. And my mother ended up leaving him. She said all your daddy ever talked about was getting out of the Navy and buying him a shack in the woods. And so when he retired, you know what he did? He bought him a shack in the woods. And he built his house, a flat top house with just a sliding door, no windows. And in 1976, he had a painter come out and they painted it red, white, and blue. And he put America the Beautiful and God Bless America on both sides of it. Big old white letters. Interstate 20 missed it by 80 foot. And people were going down Interstate 20, thought it was a novelty shop. And they would pull off and drive in Dad's driveway, wanting to know what Dad was selling. It didn't attract many people. And people got down and nobody wanted to go in that house. But I'm telling you, that house had an attraction for me. It didn't look like much, and people passed it by, and people dropped in and got nothing out of it. But you know what I always liked about that house? Hey, my father lived in there. But I'd go out there, and I'd sit with that little old... My daddy slept on an army cot for the last 20 years of his life. And I'd go out there and sit. He had a little old potty chair in the corner. He didn't even have a... He didn't have no running water, didn't have a toilet, didn't have nothing. And I'd go out there and I'd sit in this little potty chair. Daddy would sit there on that army cot and he'd go down to Gibson's department store and he'd buy beans when it was on sale for a nickel a can. He'd buy 10 cases. And I'd go out there and he'd have all these beans stuck up under his army cot. And he'd pull a can of beans out and pitch them to him. He'd say, eat me. He said, enjoy a can of beans with me, Chipper. I'd sit there and eat them beans with my dad. Said, it wasn't much. Oh, to me it was a lot. Hey, you know what? People driving by this church tonight, and it doesn't attract everybody in town. But you know what I like about this place? My father's here. I find my father at home. And I can enjoy my father when I come down to the church house. It's a storehouse. It's got plenty. There's food and to spare. I come in here to eat. I come in here to drink. I come in here to get my health restored. Have you ever come to church feeling terrible and you walked out feeling bad when you come in? That's because our Father cares about the way we feel. You know what else is in the Father's house? The Father's there and there's food there, but there's fine linen. You know what that prodigal son found when he got back to the Father's house? He found some clothes. You know what I learned about clothes? You know clothes will make you look better than you really are. I don't know why people are taking them off today. Put them on. You know what? Clothes cover up scars and bumps and wrinkles and blemishes and freckles and blotches. Then you take your clothes off, everybody's going, whoa! Clothes make you look better than you really are. You can put a suit and a tie on a thief and a bum and make him look like a saint. Can I tell you, Jesus will make you look better than you really are. You put on Christ and people will think you are a lot better. And we know who you are and you know yourself better than we do. But Jesus makes us look better than we really are. You know what else is in the Father's house? There's a lot of music. A lot of singing to soothe the nerves. To calm the soul's fear. You can clap your hands. You can lift your arms. You can sing away the tiredness and the weariness. You can dance for joy. You can forget your troubles. You can lose them all in the songs that are down at the house, at the Father's house. And with all that that was in the Father's house, there's a Son. And the Son is far. He's far away from the Father's house. He's far away from mercy. He's far away from forgiveness. He's far away from that love and that singing. He's far away from the storehouse of plenty. He's far away from the food that we're enjoying this evening. He's far away from that fine linen. He's far away from the singing. And he's miserable. He's absolutely miserable. No man, he gets to the point where things just keep getting worse and worse and worse. His friends leave him. His money's gone. He thinks nobody loves him and nobody cares. And he's wasting his life. And he has no fun in life, no reason for living. And things are just getting worse and worse and worse. So how are we going to get him to the Father's house? How are we going to get him to the storehouse? How are we going to get him to the food and the fine linen? How are we going to save him from a horrible death? You know how we're going to get him to the Father's house? We'll send a famine on him. God's going to send a famine on him. God's going to drive him back to the Father's house. God's going to make him wake up one morning and want it so bad. He said, I don't care what I've done. I don't care what I've been through. I'm going back. I'm going back to the Father. And God uses a famine. You say, why is life so miserable for me this evening? I'll let you answer that. Life had dried up. I imagine God had sent him down into that hog pen and out in that famine for 7 years. You know, I've been in church now since 1976. I've been preaching since 1976. My whole life has been totally involved in church for 34 years now. And I've watched children grow up so unappreciative. And I've watched people sour up on the things that are of God. And maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But sometimes I think God just kind of opens up the door and just shoos them out. Just shoos them out and they stay out there and God sends that famine and things just get worse and worse and worse. And you wonder sometimes what is happening and what are they doing and what's God doing? Maybe He's just sending them a famine to drive them back. For you see, it's a famine that makes Him want to come back to the Father's house. It's a famine that makes Him head back to the storehouse. It's a famine that makes Him come to Himself when all the preaching and all the pleading and all the praying just doesn't seem to work. God knows how to get Jacob down to Joseph. God knows how to get you to Jesus too. God knows how to get your heart. God knows how. God knows how to get Jacob down to that storehouse. God knows how to get that son back to the Father's house. God knows how to get you back to church. He knows how to do it. But you say, I've been there and nothing's happened. That's the same place that these boys were in, this family was in, when we read those scriptures. You see, they had already been to Joseph's house once, to the storehouse. But times had got no better. They had already been down there. They had already tasted of the food. They had already been down there. They had already received. But they got treated so roughly. And Joseph now had told them, you cannot see my face if you don't bring your brother with you. You must bring the father's favorite son. If you come back and you want anything from me, you better not come unless you bring Benjamin. You cannot sit at my table if you don't bring your brother. You cannot come into my house if you don't bring your brother. You can't eat of my food if you don't bring Benjamin. That's why Joseph told him. Ain't no sense in you coming back. You don't come back with your brother. Say, who's Benjamin? When Benjamin was born, Rachel was dying. And Rachel called him Benoni, which means the son of pain. But Jacob took him and renamed him Benjamin, which is the son of my right hand. And Joseph said, you can't see my face if you don't bring that son of my right hand. If you bring your brother, if you bring the father's favorite, you can see my face again. If you bring your brother, you can sit at my table. If you bring your brother, you can eat some of my food. If you bring your brother, you can come into my house and I'll let you live in the land and I'll give you the best of everything I got. But you better bring your brother. You're not going to get much from God if you don't bring the Father's favorite. If you don't bring the Father's favorite, you know what John said? John said, whosoever denieth the Son hath not the Father. He that acknowledges the Son, he hath the Father. You see, Jesus was the son of pain at Calvary. But no longer, he's the son of that right hand. And when you come, bring him. Bring his death, because he died for you. Bring his hands, they were nailed for you. Bring his blood, it was shed for you. Bring his wounds, he suffered for you. Bring his agony, he hurt for you. Bring his life, he got up for you. You're not going to get much from God if you don't bring the brother. So what do you get if you bring the brother? So you bring Jesus. So what do you get? First thing you get is a pardon. The first thing you get is forgiveness. Look what they had done to Joseph. They had stripped him. They wanted Joseph to suffer. They cursed him. They would put him in the pit. They gave him no water. They wanted him to die. They wanted him to suffer in pain. They sold him. He pleaded with them and they ignored him. They put him in a pit. They gave him no water. They deprived him of the Father's house. They took him from the Father. And now they stand very, very guilty. That's what they had done to Joseph. But look what Joseph had done to them. He wept over them when he should have cursed them. Joseph embraced them. He fed them. He clothed them when he should have imprisoned them. Joseph sat them down at his table when he should have sent them home empty. Joseph let them dwell in the land and he nourished them. I was working in the jail back for 10 years. I worked the fifth floor of the Harris County Jail in downtown Houston. And on the fifth floor, they had all the high-profile killers, and most of them all went to death row up in Huntsville. And for 10 years, every Thursday at 1:30, they would bring them all out of their cells, and they would have them in leg chains, and they would have them in bracelets and arm chains. And they would come clanging their chains, and, boy, they would bring them into a room about half this size, and, boy, they would set them down, and they'd lock me in there with them for 1 hour. And I learned that when you close that door locked up with that many of them, just start preaching right then and don't shut up for 1 hour. Don't even give them time to breathe, pray, or ask for anything. Just start preaching. And through the years, I could tell you of some of those boys that I saw saved. But there was an old boy by the name of Joey Pristash. And I can still hear those chains. When he got out of that seat and bowed on his knees and those arm chains hit that concrete floor, I can still hear the chains rattling. Joey Pristash had been hired by a policeman. We had a cop went bad, and he hired Joey and his Cajun boy by the name of Guidry to kill his wife. So they killed his wife. So anyway, it unwound, and it made front page news, and they all three got the death sentence. And so Joey is in this room the day that I'm preaching. And old Joy, like I said, he dropped down his knees and he wept and cried. So some months later, and I would visit him every Thursday. I'd go by his isolation cell and there was a slot in that old metal door. And we'd talk back and forth and talk about the Lord. And I got him a Bible and we became good friends. So when he went to trial, they was 2 days into the trial and his lawyer called me and he said, "Look, preacher," he said, "Joy has told me about your influence in his life and what you've done for him. And said, look, they're going to give him," he said, "there's not much been said good about him for 2 days of trial." And he said, "I know he's guilty." He said, "I'm not trying to get him off, but I'm trying to keep him out of that death chamber. If I could just get him life in prison." And he said, "Not one good thing's been said about him." He said, "Would you come and take the witness stand and just say something good about him?" So they swore me in. They put me up there in that jury box, and there's all the, you know, the 12 jurors are sitting there, and the defense attorney, he asked me my name and who I was, and then he asked me some questions, and then he had me tell about what I saw, Joy. And I'm sitting there with the jury and all the people and the prosecutor and the judge, and I'm telling them about that day that I'm preaching. And I said, "The Holy Ghost come in there." And I said, "I watched him." I said, "That Holy Ghost come in there and it began to settle." And I said, "I saw Joy get down on his knees and ask God to save him." And so I gave old Joy's testimony. Well, as soon as I finished, this woman prosecutor, she bounced to her feet. She said, "Reverend," she said, "do you mean to tell me that this man can go out in that world and kill an innocent woman and come into this jail and your God will forgive him and save him? Boy, I lifted my hand. I said, ma'am. I said, I believe it. And she said, why? And I said, because it happened to me. And immediately she said, he's unqualified. He has no degree. He's been to no school. He's not a psychologist. He cannot declare what has happened to this man. The state of Texas might have gave him death, but God gave him life. And when you come to God and bring his brother, can I tell you what you'll get? You'll get forgiveness, royal forgiveness. I don't care what you've done. I don't care where you've been. God will forgive you. Listen to the Apostle Paul. I was before a blasphemer, a persecutor, injurious. I'm beating and hailing and putting people in prison. I thought it right to do everything contrary to the name of Christ. But I obtained mercy. Look what he had done to Christ, but look what Christ done for him. Can I get closer to home? Look what you've done to Jesus. Remember what you used to do to his name? Remember when you used to cuss his name and drag it through the trenches of sin? Do you look what you've done to his house? You've denied it at times, ignored it, neglected it. Look what you've done to his book. You've accused it, lied about it, said it wasn't true. Look at what you've done to his laws. You have broken every law that he has. Look what you've done to him. But my God, look what he's done for you. He saved you. He changed you. He put you in the church house. He let you sing the songs. He let you carry a Bible. He let you pray. One day you'll go to heaven. Look what he's done for you. If you come, bring your brother. You'll get plenty of pardon and forgiveness. What else will you get? Plenty. There's plenty in that storehouse. Regard not your stuff, Joseph told him, for the good of all the land is yours. I've been saved now 34 years, and I didn't know I was going to get all this when I got saved. I didn't know I was going to get to go around the country and meet Brother Joe and Brother Charlie and Brother Tim and Brother John. I didn't know I was going to get to do all that. I didn't get to know I was going to get to come to Alabama and stand up here and preach, and you poor people had to listen to me. I didn't know that I was going to get to enjoy the things I've enjoyed and go where I go and do what I do. I remember when I came to Christ. I came with nothing. I had absolutely nothing when I came. I had a dried up life and a guilty soul. The Sunday before I got saved, you talk about tattered garments. I was wearing a Budweiser shirt, Budweiser Bermuda shorts, Budweiser tennis shoes, and a Budweiser hat. On the Lord's Day, I went calling myself the King of Beers. I came that next Sunday into the church house. I had nothing. I had nothing at all. I had sins plenty. I had a family in need. I had children that needed a dad, a wife that needed a husband. And do you know what I got? The first thing that Joseph gave them when they came in, you know what he gave them? The same thing I got, change of raiment. Joseph took a look at him and he said, oh, you boys ain't dressed right. Come in my house. God looked at me and he said, you ain't dressed right to come in here. If you're going to come in my house, you're going to have to dress right or you can't come in at all. I had tank tops and shorts and tennis shoes. But he said, if you're going to sit at my table, you're going to have to dress right. You're going to have to dress different. And he took off them old clothes and he put on Christ. Now I'm dressed different. I can come in now and sit and enjoy. I can come in now and sit and enjoy the songs. I have got the clothes on. I have got the raiment on. He changed my raiment. So if you come in and sit at his table, you got to put on some new clothes. There's plenty of food. They were eating things now in Joseph's house that they wasn't eating in that famine. They was eating mush out there in that famine land. But now sitting at Joseph's table, they're eating a meal. Well, the things that we enjoy when we come to church, it's called a meal. When he piled that food up in front of them boys, he said he put a mess up there. A big old mess in front of them. You know what this is? That's a pretty good mess. That's a big mess. That's pile high. That's a big mess. They had never eaten so much. Listen, people don't know what it's like to enjoy the things of the Word of God. It's something when you can dig into that book and find you something to chew on that will last all day and all week. They came in. You know what else Joseph gave them? He gave them some cash. He gave them pieces of silver. That'll make anybody happy to have some cash. You put a couple of $100 bills in your pocket, son, you feel pretty good. God put a little cash in your pocket. That's what Joseph did, put some cash in the pocket, send them home. My father died right after I got saved. And we went up to the funeral. And during the funeral, Darwin Cox is the president of the M&F State Bank. He come up to me and he said, you matters boys, y'all come over to my office tomorrow. So that next day, we went over there to M&F State Bank and he took us in that back room and sent me and my brother down, the families, and reached up there and pulled that safety deposit box out of that wall. He set it there on that table and handed me the key and he said, it's all yours. You're the firstborn. Well, I took that key and opened up that safety deposit box, and inside there, he handed me a deed to my daddy's land. I'd never owned land all my life. All of a sudden, I got a deed, 3 acres. He reached inside there and he took the title of my dad's house and handed it to me. I ain't never owned a home. All of a sudden, I got deed to land, got title of the house. Then he reached down there and there's $10,000 cash. He took that $10,000. I ain't never held $10,000 in my hand. Boy, I started home. I said, you know, when I left out of Houston, I was a poor boy. And I said, I'm headed home now. I got land, I got a house, and I got cash. I said, I got it all the day my father died. I had nothing until the day my father died. All of a sudden, now I got everything. I got about halfway home, boy, and the light came on. I said, whoa, the day I got saved, I had nothing. Now I got a title. I got a title to a house on the other side. I got deed to some land on the other side. Listen, I've got cash to make it all the way home. How'd you get it? Got it the day my father died. The day my father died, I got loaded. I'm a rich man. Brother Jack always called us broke millionaires. That's what he called us. So if you come, bring your brother. What else will you get? You get in the palace. Joseph said, bring these men to my house. Bring them to my house. And they stepped out of that famine land, them goatskin tents, and stepped into Joseph's house. Looked around at all that carpet, padded pews, AC, heat, fans, food, pulpit, organ playing, piano making music. They said, the peace in this place. Ain't never been in no place like his. Joseph set them down at a table in his house and piled the mess up before him, and they began to drink and were merry. Happiest that they ever been in their life. Had an old boy downtown Houston named Leo. Leo got asbestos poison and couldn't work, lost his apartment, lost his job, and ended up sleeping down on the streets of Houston. He'd sleep in them old alleys and eat out of them trash cans and sleep over at old rescue mission. And he started coming over to my little old church that I had downtown Houston for 15 years. And Leo come in there and just a little old skinny thing, about 35 years old, and little old bony arms. And he'd come in there and he'd just drop down at my feet. And he'd take his little hands, he'd wrap them around my ankles, my boots. And he'd just bare his face into my boots and he'd say, preacher, pray for me. I don't like it down here. I don't want to live down here. I don't know what to do, and I don't know where to go. Well, I remember kneeling down on that floor and putting my arm around Leo, and I remember saying, God, would you help old Leo? I don't know where to take him. I don't know what to do, but you know God. You know what he needs. He come in one day, and he began to tell me his life story, and he's sitting there at my desk, and he was the 11th child of a family that come out of Madison Heights, West Virginia. He said, I left home when I was 14 years old. He said, I hadn't seen my sisters. And I hadn't been back at the house. He said, I'd just been roaming and bumming around. And so I picked up the phone and I called the police department in Madison Heights, West Virginia. He told me his sister's name, Maddie, I forget the last name. And they connected me with the social workers and vital statistics. And boy, they kept sending me around the horn. Eventually, I found his oldest sister, way up there in her 70s, close to 80s. She answered, they give me the number, and I called it, and I said, and this voice answered, she said, yes. And I said, this is Preacher Dan in Houston. Who is this? She said, this is Maddie. And I said, Maddie, I said, I got somebody here that I know would love to talk to you. And I handed that phone to Leo. Leo started talking to that sister that he hadn't seen in 30, 25 years. Boy, them old tears just started pouring out of his eyes. And directly, them old eyes just beamed wide open. And I said, she said, come on home. Yeah. Old Leo hung that phone up and he said, she wants me to come home. Boy, I remember I got Leo. He didn't have a thing. We went down to the Salvation Army and bought a duffel bag, put everything in it. Got him a cane and a big old cowboy hat. Big old cowboy hat sitting on a little old head. And I took him down to the Greyhound bus station, put him on that Greyhound bus. And I could still see that bus pulling out of that stall. And he had his face pressed up against the window. And as he pulled out, I was standing on the sidewalk. And he was saying, thank you, preacher. Thank you, preacher. Thank you, preacher. I waved. And old Leo just waved out of sight. 2 weeks later, I'm sitting at my desk and the phone rings. I pick it up and said, preacher, Leo here. He said, preacher, you ought to see the house I'm living in. He said, preacher, you ought to see the table I'm eating at. He said, preacher, he said, you ought to see the bed I'm sleeping in. He said, preacher, you ought to see the kinfolks that are coming by. He said, preacher, I think I'm in heaven. And the whole time that Leo was laying down on them sidewalks and eating out of them trash cans, he didn't know that he had a mansion with a table and a bed and kinfolks up in the mountains of Madison Heights, West Virginia. And you know what we forget sometimes in all our difficulties? We forget that just over the hilltop, there's a mansion over there. There's a table over there. There's kinfolks over there. You see, the church, it's the Father's house down here. But the palace, it's the Father's house over there. There's streets of gold that run up to it. A few years before Brother Jack died, he had an old dope shooting buddy named Burt Rankin, and they used to rob safes and shoot dope all the time, and both of them had got saved. And old Burt was pastoring, he was doing a little itinerary work up in East Texas around Longview and Marshall, and he was pastoring four little old country churches, going from one to each one on a Sunday. And old Bert, like Brother Jack, they both got hepatitis C and shooting that old heroin when they were boys. And Bert was dying. And he called Brother Jack and said, I'd love to see you before I die. So I got to ride 3 hours from Houston all the way up to Longview. And I sat in that ICU and I sat in the corner and listened to Brother Jack and old Bert Rankin. And Bert's got, he's wired up. He's got tubes in his nose. And he's not going to live another 48 hours. And I sat there and listened to them two old characters talk about the safes they had robbed. Talk about the places that they had broke into. And the people that had died, their friends that had died. Oh, then I heard them start talking about the day they got saved. Then they got to talking about the things that God had done for them. And the people that they had all saved and the churches that they pastored. And I sat over in that corner. I was on cloud nine listening to these two old characters talk about a whole lifetime in the things of God. That was on a Friday, Sunday morning when I went to church. Brother Jack caught me at the door and he told me Bert Rankin had called him last night and said, oh, Bert died. She said, you know what he said right before he died? She said he was laying there in that bed and said, she was watching him, said all of a sudden he sat up. She said, he lifted his hand and said, would you look at that? He said, look at them streets. He said, my. He said, look at them streets. And Brother Jack looked at me and he said, I bet he wasn't talking about the streets of Houston either. Listen, there's streets. You know what you get when you come and you bring your brother? You get a palace. And there's streets of gold that lead right up to the front door. Listen, they got a garden where the trees are blooming year-round. They got a river running through the city. They got gates of pearl, walls of jasper. They got the Lamb, He's the light. So you see, even in famine times, God knows what's going on. Even in the most difficult times when you can't sense His presence, He knows. And that famine turned out to be the best thing in Jacob's life. It got him to God. It got him down to Joseph's house, got them boys in the palace. They lived in that land of Egypt till the day they died, never had another worry. Everything they needed, Joseph took care of. That old prodigal son, he looked back years later and he said, the best time, he said, one of the most difficult times of my life turned out to be the best time. That old famine got me to God. Listen, let me close with this. They dropped me off on the front steps of an orphan's home when I was 8 years old in 1956. 11 years I lived in that orphan's home. No mom, no dad. And I thought at times that it was the most difficult and hardest place. I wanted to just leave. I used to walk out in the woods sometimes. I'd look up into the heavens and I'd say, God, what am I doing here? There were times at night I'd cry myself to sleep. 11 years of difficulty. But you know what God done with those 11 years? Years later, 1974, when I was out there at that orphan's home, us boys, there was 50 boys. And you think you're having trouble raising the one you got? Try 50 of them. We're talking about 50 orphan boys that come out of troubled home, and we love to get in trouble. If we wasn't in trouble, we'd start trouble just to get in on it. And the old man that raised us was always saying, boys, he'd chew us out. And then sometimes he'd take an oak board and he'd do more than chew us out. That was the days when fathers could minister capital punishment. And he would always say, boys, if you'd just be like Richard Harris, you'd all be fine young men. And I heard that for 11 years. 11 years at orphan's home. Be like Richard Harris. Be like Richard Harris. We got to where us boys would say, if we ever find this guy. But we were going to send him to the belt line. We were going to make him crawl. We were going to throw belt. We were going to set him on fire. We had all kinds of things. 1974, when my life was in a famine. I walked in the back door of the Langwood Baptist Church on the north side of Houston, Texas. First time I've ever been there. I hadn't been in church in years. And there was a man standing there in a blue pinstripe suit passing out church bulletins. Looked at me, shook my hand, said, glad to have you here today. My name is Richard Harris. I'm telling you, the hair on the back of my head sits straight up. I sat down in that church house and I couldn't even think about what that preacher was preaching. All I'm thinking about, this is not him. It's got to be more than one. This can't be him. And so after the service, I went and asked him, and this was the guy that I was told to be like all my life. He visited my house once a month for a year and a half. And on that Sunday morning in 1976, when my life was at its worst, I got up and I said, we're going to church. They said, where are we going? We're going down there where Richard's at. And that's the day God saved me. The most difficult years of my life, those 11 years at orphan's home, God raised up a witness to win me to God. But if that's all He did, that'd be enough. But He done more than that. I had a little old gal that I loved back there in that orphan's home. Had our last date, May the 31st, 1967. I said, one of these days, I said, I'm going to come back and marry you. She wrote it down in her little calendar, 1967 calendar book. I went one way And we dated and, you know, we, like teenagers, we told each other we loved each other, we're going to get married, we were going to have all these plans. In 1967, I went one way. 2 years later, she left, she went another way. 37 years later, her husband died to cancer, my wife died to cancer. She's a teacher in Austin, I'm a preacher in Houston. The only thing that separated us was a T and a P. And after 37 years, our paths crossed again. And we got married. Amen. And out of those 11 difficult years of my life that I thought I hated, God raised up a witness to win me to God. God raised me up a wife to finish my life with. I'm telling you, you don't know what God's doing in a famine. You have no idea what God does when He sends hard times. But what He's trying to do is get you to God. He's trying to do something marvelous in your life. Would you bow your heads with me? Brother Jesse, would you come to the piano? You don't have to wait for the music, but you can. Whatever it takes to bring you close to God. Times get difficult. Times get hard. You can't find Him. Oh, He's there. He's there. He cares. He knows what to do. He knows when to do it. Stay close. Let the most difficult times of your life, let God do something in it. Let Him do something for you. There's a brighter day. There's a good God that knows what He's doing. I imagine them old boys, after they'd moved down there to Joseph's house, I bet they looked back upon that famine many, many times. And I bet they thanked God for the bad times while they were in the good times. Rest assured, brothers and sisters, God does know what He's doing. He knows.